Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
the way the world should be,
the podcast about the unknown. Not so long ago, I was talking with Naomi Heiser. She's a map librarian at the University of Colorado Boulder, and she was telling me about this book.
This thing called the Nuremberg Chronicle, and the person who compiled this sent people all over Europe to draw sketches of the different cities. And so if that was something that many people were able to look at, then they would have started to have a sense of what was around them. But it was illustrated with these strange drawings of monstrous peoples who supposedly inhabited different parts of the world.
And so, like, here's someone with a giant foot, like an enormous foot on one leg. Here's someone whose head is part of their chest. They're very strange pictures, but they're someone's idea of the unknown is why I wanted you to see them.
We'll be hearing more from Naomi a little bit later in the show, but in the meantime, I wanted to take a look at these monsters, get a little bit of a better picture for myself. The Nuremberg Chronicle. What I'm looking at is this PDF from 1493 AD. And, oh yeah, this is Jeff from Here Be Monsters, just so you know. And I didn't even know you could make a PDF that long, let alone in 1493. And this document, the Nuremberg Chronicle, is, well, I guess it's written in Latin. That's a problem. Hey, it's Jeff.
Hi.
Hey, do you know why I'm calling you? Yeah, that's right. Can you help me out with this? I've been looking at this thing called the Nuremberg Chronicle, and I sent you a link to it. Can you go to, like, page 93? It's that page with all those really strange-looking creatures on it. There's, like, a guy with, like, his head and his torso, and there's, like, a wolf person and a cyclops and a woman with really, really, really big ears. Can you read me some of that text in Latin and then in English?
Basically, they're saying that in India there are men with the head of a dog that bark when they speak. And they feed on birds and they clothe themselves or wear the skins of animals. In Libya, some men are born headless with only mouth and eyes, like on their chest. That was kind of implied, I guess.
So this is the page with, like, the man with six arms and the two-legged centaur and the person with the ostrich neck and the person with, like, five faces. But, like, the big part of this page, like, is that kind of convoluted-looking map. Like, what's your impression of all of this? I don't know, like, the initial impression I get is, like, it kind of reminds me of, like, a police sketch of a suspect, you know? It's like you have someone who saw something, And then they come home and try to relate it to someone else who tries to make something consumable by the people, you know? Or in this case, the elites, I suppose, but... Thanks so much, Celeste. I really appreciate it. I think the first thing that's important is to have you introduce yourself.
Okay. Right now? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am Naomi Heiser. And I'm at the CU Map Library.
I came down here today, and there's this little spread.
Yeah, I set that out.
Can you tell me what all this is?
Well, you had asked about maps that illustrate this idea that people didn't always know what was in the world or what was covering the globe. And so I thought what would be interesting to do is show you a bunch of my favorite images that offer some idea of how people filled in a space they didn't know about. Starting in, you know, the late 1400s and then moving into the mid-1500s, there was a lot of different expeditions that gave little bits and pieces to people to fill in the parts of the map. But the other way they filled it in was for two other reasons. One was political. The people who drew the maps wanted to please the rulers of countries who were doing the colonizing, and so they created fantasies of where things were, or they filled in areas to make it look like they knew more than they did, or it was a competition, especially between Portugal and Spain. And the other way that I think is even more interesting is that people had certain concepts about what the world should be like that were philosophical, and so the maps were created to fit those visual concepts, or even the spiritual concepts, because they were religious in nature too. These ideas about the way the world should be based on biblical stories, those carried over from medieval times.
I looked through a bunch of these yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like there was either a certain time period, or I don't know what it was, but... where, especially in the water, but like there's always these great creatures.
Yes, right. And some are imagined and some were perhaps based on things people had seen and reported back on. But yes, I mean, people had been bringing back the actual creatures from Africa and Asia to the European courts, you know, so they could see those. The pictures that are most interesting are the ones where supposedly they were looking at the New World. And so the natives, some of those pictures are pretty interesting. There's a lot of cannibalism imagery going on. Even, I mean, who knows whether they really saw people cannibalizing others or not? Probably not. And then there's pictures of these fantastical creatures, like things that look like giant crocodiles. Or
you also have all these sailors. They're just out there, like, all whacked out on scurvy for, like, months on end.
They probably
and,
are.
You know, they see stuff
out there. They might
have
seen things,
and
yes.
I could just imagine them coming home. And, you know, it's like when you see something you don't understand, or when you experience something you don't understand, like, how do you describe that to others?
Right, that's true. I mean, I'm sure there were all sorts of things that were completely new to them, especially when they got to the New World. You have this entire new group of plants and animals that no one had ever seen before, right? And the illustrations of the natives and the kind of things that they wore and the kind of things that they did, those illustrations are very exaggerated, the early ones. So, yes, I imagine they saw giant whales and other sea creatures and were completely freaked out by them.
Right. Like, you imagine seeing a narwhal for the first time.
And that's supposedly where the unicorn legend comes from. But, yes, people had ideas of these creatures, and who knows whether they came from something they just quickly glimpsed in real life, and some of them were completely imaginary. I mean, people have incredible imaginations. That's what I mean about filling in the world based on concepts. Like, you know, if your concept is that the world has to be balanced as a sphere with a certain amount of weight of Earth on one end and weight on Earth on the other, and then you completely make up a southern continent, right, to balance it out, or you completely make up something in a big ocean space because it seems unbalanced otherwise. And so it's just conceptual, and it's based on some aesthetic idea of how the world should be physically, and it's not true at all.
It makes me a little bit sad that our maps today don't have, like, dragons and,
yeah,
and like, octopus and squid, like, eating boats and, like, all these other creatures, right, we don't even have names for.
Yeah.
You know, does it take some of the romance out to know things?
You know, I think that most of the maps that we see now that are contemporarily produced don't have any of that visual aesthetic left, the individual aesthetic. And since I happen to like art and I like that stuff, it makes me sad.
Do you think there's any modern equivalents to these, like, uncharted areas?
There are these people who do, like, futuristic mapping. Do you want me to show you one of these maps?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a map that we consider kind of a joke, although we bought it for the collection because it was different and because it predicts the future of the world in a map based on someone's ideas. And it's very cataclysmic. It's sort of like a dystopian map of what this person thinks is going to happen. But it's also based partly on global warming, which is acceptable.
Gordon Michael Scallion is this guy's name.
Naomi takes me over to these giant filing cabinets at one end of the library. This is where the library's large format, non-folding maps are stored. We rifle through them, looking for George Michael Scallion's future map of the world. And after a bit of searching, we find the map, and I have to say, it's, well, it's a bit different.
Their interpretations of certain signs. So here's this future map of the world. So in 1996, he made certain predictions about 2012. There's things that are supposed to be happening now, and we're looking at some new continents arising out of the ocean floor, like one called Lemuria. There's more of Lemuria. Atlantis will arise in the Atlantic.
There's two Atlantises.
Oh, there are. You have a lot of the United States being inundated by water. So these predictions are based on what?
The blue star, of course.
The blue star. The blue star. Okay. A pole shift. Upcoming indications of a pole shift. So, yes, a new sun will appear in the heavens. The ring of fire. The ring of fire is that giant circle around the earth that's the plate tectonics. Just a bunch of ideas that all seem to go together for him. The point of this is that you can use a map to show whatever you want, right? It's fantastical. Right. And sometimes I have to tell you, it's funny, when we've shown this to younger children, it's been a mistake because they get scared. They think because it looks like a real map that it's true. Because they're convinced by it. It looks like a professionally made map.
So you're saying just because you put something on a map doesn't make it true?
No, and the thing is, though, if you present it in a way that's what the conventions are that everyone understands, which is a map that is set on a projection. Everyone recognizes this map. It looks like what people are used to seeing. They think it's real.
So maybe Gordon Michael Scallion's future map of the world and the maps that were made back in the day to please God or to please the dignitaries might be
similar.
Fairly similar.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I would agree with that. Yeah, that's right. To suit someone's idea of what they think is happening or what they think should be happening.
Right.
Yes, I agree.
The show today. A big thank you to Celeste Payden for helping out with the Latin bits on very short notice, and also a thank you to Naomi Heiser over at the CU Boulder Map Library. And of course, a big thanks to all the new fans out there on Facebook, which is where you can find the show and stay up to date with all the latest HBM news. This show is made possible by the good folks over at SoundCloud Community Fellowship, which Here Be Monsters is proud to be a part of. Music from today's show comes from our good friends Swamp Dog and Bug Jerome. be sure to check out their music, linked up right here in the comments. Next show's a good one, and I don't want to give it away, but I can tell you that it takes place a couple of feet underwater in the Puget Sound of Washington State.
The dock was covered in white sea anemones. It looked like a marble, like Roman pillars, alive Roman pillars, all the way down. I was just like, whoa. All these fish started just doing their normal thing. These big, beautiful fish were coming, and I was just in the wave. Just fully, everything looked sparkling, magical, alive Roman pillars.
Thanks for listening.